Hi, this is James White once again for the Solution Series, brought to you by Solari.com and Corey'sDigs.com. And I am joined, as always, by my co-host, Corey Lynn. Corey, great to have you here today. As always, good to see you.
Good to be here. This is going to be another fantastic episode.
It is. It's going to be very, very informative. And our guest today, Rich Sheban, has been doing this for an awful long time. And the topic that we're covering today, he is, I would consider, an expert in that topic. And we're talking about off-grid living. And let me give Rich a quick, brief introduction. He's been on talk radio for over 12 years. He's a regular on USAprepares.com with Vince Finelli. He's been living off-grid for over 15 years. And he came from the metropolitan area of New York, where he lived there for 26 years. And he was a drug rep, of all people. People that we're not really too friendly with here on this podcast, because we know what pharmaceutical medication does to folks. Nonetheless, we're delighted to have Rich Sheban, the Montana Mountain Man, here on the broadcast with us. Rich, so glad you're here.
Thank you, Jim. Thank you, Corey. It's my pleasure. And hopefully we can give your listeners some good ideas and solutions on how I go about things.
Yeah, you know, what was fast? Well, first off, we should say you did, now it's 10 years old at this point, but you did write a book. And what is the title of your book?
It's kind of a mouthful, Corey. It's titled One New York Man's Journey to Off-Grid Living in Montana.
Okay. So I think it would be great if you just kind of shared your story of how you learned at a pretty young age what was going on and why you decided to make the move in the first place before we get into all the awesome things you're doing.
Okay, sure. You know, I grew up in New York. I enjoyed New York. I enjoyed the nightclubs. I enjoyed everything about it, but I had this inner innate desire to live in nature, to live in the country, to do the mountain man thing, as Jim said. And I found some lessons along the way to show me the illegitimacy of the system. And that is, I'll give you a few quick examples I gave during the pre-interview. I think that's what you're alluding to, Corey. In 79, I was 19 years old. I was bench pressing 365 pounds. I was trying to get a job as a New York City fireman, so I could have carried most people up and down ladders. That was the year that the women's groups of New York City sued. You can look it up if they haven't censored it, and literally sued to demand to lower the bars and standards and expectations for a job. And then I was told that the only way as a white male to get a job at that point is if you had veterans credits. Wow. After that, I got a degree in forestry in 82. I went to the National Forest Service, which was one of my methods of getting to the Northern Rockies, which I'm in today. I've been in Northwest Montana or Montana for 37-ish years. I'm 62 right now. So anyway, I went to the interview. I showed up with a great degree and experience, and they told me at the interview by a white male that they would not hire me. And basically they hired two girls sitting in the waiting room, 18 years old, no education, no experience. And something similar, very similar, happened to me with GlaxoSmithKline, and it was the same thing. So I realized early in life that hard work, effort, proven results, qualifications, word of honor, standards and expectations, basically merit, didn't hold as much water as we thought. So my 3 degrees was kind of a waste in a way. And if I had to do it all over again, I probably would have been an electrician with one of the 10% of electricians to have the ability to work on off-grid homes and set them up with batteries that way, the way I'm living now. And I would have made such a difference in people's lives. So I learned early on that the system's corrupt to the bone, that merit doesn't mean anything. And all this fancy talk about equality and fairness and all this, these politically correct buzzwords, Corey, I also found out don't mean anything, because one of the things I do on talk radio is uncover a lot of the economics to share that the bottom 93% isn't getting equality, fairness, and all this stuff. They're actually losing ground, and the money's going to the top 1 to 2%. So
Right.
that my solution is what I'm doing now and practicing what I preach and living off grid, living off the land, and being as frugal as I possibly can.
So,
Go ahead, Jim.
when you say living off grid, Rich, I've been to your place out there. You are pretty much fully off grid. I mean, some of the systems that you have out there that I recognize, and if I don't catch them all, please correct me. But you've got a tremendous garden out there. You also have a gravity-fed water system. You also do animal husbandry, where you raise and raise a variety of different animals. Of course, you have the dogs to protect yourself against from the grizzly bears, and you also have the electrical setup where you, I think, collect the solar energy and you store it in the battery packs and then utilize that in your house. But it's fascinating how you've been able to put all that together. How long did it take? And we can go over each one of those elements if you don't mind. How long
And you
did you?
forgot hunting,
Well, hunting, right? He's a world-class hunter,
right?
right? But did you do all of that at one time, Rich? When you decided to go off grid and live in the place that you're at now, did you put all of those elements in place at once, or did you just start with a cabin and then kind of build out from there and then create each one of these systems? Like every year, one year you put a garden in, the next year you did the electricity, the next year you did the animal husbandry. How did that process work?
Well, how it worked is I bought a piece of land. I started with 166 acres, and this is all in my book, so it's not like I'm making this stuff up. And after I was in the corporate corrupt system for over 20 years, when I bought this land, I built a little on-grid cottage that I lived in for 2 years. And my objective was to sell it right after that 2 years so I can reap the benefits of the capital gains exemption law and not have to pay taxes. And then I built this log cabin that you see me in right now. And Jim, you've been here several times. So everything I did was not necessarily all at once. I expanded things, like I expanded my solar panels, I expanded my raised bed gardens, I added one greenhouse. The only thing that I really always had was the chickens and the guard dogs. And the reason why I have guard dogs is because, as per my trail cams, all my cameras around the place, I got a 3-to-1 ratio of grizzly bears to black bears. And we got lions, we got coyotes, we got fox, we got birds of prey, many different types of birds of prey, from eagles to ospreys to ravens and hawks. I mean, osprey is really a fish hawk, and they're attacking my chickens. Without these dogs, I wouldn't have a carrot in the garden. I wouldn't have a goat. I wouldn't have a chicken. I wouldn't have this lifestyle. And they all work in synergy. Basically, the goats keep my pasture grass down and protect me from fires. My chickens, obviously, we get meat and eggs, and the garden produces a lot of produce. And they all work in synergy because when I clean out the barn and the chicken coop, all the straw-laced poop goes into my compost pile and sits there for almost a year. In the beginning of November, I will harvest the pile and spread it around in my gardens, including my raised beds. It's in my greenhouses as well. So I make my own soil and supplement my nutrients with all of those critters, but they all work in synergy. Except for the one time when one of my chickens identified as a guard dog, but that didn't work out very well.
Now you were starting to tell us about the greenhouse when you talk about, living frugal, living below your means. And I think that's really important because I think our culture has a tendency to overspend, overdo it, get in debt, become reliant. And the whole idea is we really need to move into self-reliance and self-sufficiency. So how did you accomplish, I know you built a sizable greenhouse for pretty inexpensive. How did you do that?
Yeah, good question, Corey. Well, in this lifestyle, it's not just about frugality, but it's about living with the basics: food, water, shelter, and energy. That's where probably 95% of my money goes. So one of the ways, I have two greenhouses, one stick built, and it's pretty an average greenhouse, and the other one I built real inexpensively with UV treated plastic. So what I did was, I built a ridge. First thing you do is you put in your raised bed gardens. I even recommend anybody who's going to build a garden, put the raised beds in first. So if there's machinery or you need room to maneuver, then you can pour the soil into the raised beds, and then you put up your garden fence around all the structures. So that being said, I put up a ridge pole after I put in, and some posts after I put in the raised bed, and I use what's called cattle panels. They're 16-foot panels, and most people who have critters probably know what I'm talking about. It's a great, great tool. And so what I did was I put the cattle panels over, like here's the ridge pole. I put them over the ridge pole and I overlap them, and they're 16 foot long. Now, wire, which these cattle panels are, has memory. So all I had to do was put a little wire in to connect it in a few places. And then so it connects to the ground, and I put in some rebar to hold the cattle panels to the re and wired it to the rebar. And basically, I threw the UV plastic over it and built two ends with doors on the side, very crudely, and it works great.
Now,
And
are the panels solid or are they transparent or what are they made out of?
no, they're made out of wire.
Ah,
They're like cat. It's
okay.
called cattle paneling. Excuse me. And they also have something called pig fencing or pig paneling. It's the same exact thing. They got holes in it, squares in it about this big, and it's
Okay.
just a bunch of squares. And the bottom portion of this cattle paneling, Corey, is actually have smaller holes. And then once it gets up to about, oh, a foot off the ground, then they're basically square holes going all the way
Okay.
up.
So that's
So
basically
it's
your
a
framework. It's your framework pretty much of your,
absolutely.
that's the
And I
framework that,
built the
okay.
whole
Yeah.
thing for $500.
Wow. And how large is it roughly?
It's about 40 foot long by, on the inside, I'm going to guess 10, no, probably 12 feet.
That's huge. That's a huge
Yeah, that's
greenhouse.
good
That's
size.
me standing there like that. However, I wanted it to be big enough because I'm 6 foot tall that I could walk under it without ducking.
Right. So then after you put in those panels, you said you did, what was the UV?
UV treated plastic. A lot of people just buy cheap plastic and don't think of it. The sun's too powerful, especially here in Montana during the summer months. It's Montana summers are brutal. I know it sounds hard to believe, but they're hot.
It's true.
They're brutal.
It is true. The sun's brutal.
It's unbelievable. And Corey's laughing. I'm not a big heat. I'm not a big Corey. I'm not a big heat fan. I'm My favorite temperature is between 40 and 60. In fact, right
Me
now in my
too.
cat, is it really? Right now
Yes.
in my cabin, okay, I shouldn't have put that last log in. It's 78 degrees, and it's toasty in here. So
It's 70 degrees in your cabin
78
right now.
degrees right now. Yeah, I
And
threw up that last log because I thought I'd be sitting here for a while, and I shouldn't have done that.
okay, tell us about that because that was another cool thing you were talking about with the special curtain and how you heat there because you operate solely off of the solar battery system that you have, right?
That's correct. Now I do have, I gotta say, I do have a little non-vented propane stove. So
Okay.
I only use it during the shoulder seasons for a few weeks of the year, early in the day, late in the day, but it's unvented, so it's not safe to use as a full-time heater. Does that make sense? So
Yes.
I do have that. But what Corey is talking about, folks, is I have a thermal curtain that separates my cabin. So when I built my cabin, I made the wood cook stove and the tables, places where we watch movies, a very little entertainment center. I also have a solarium on the southeast corner of my cabin. So I start and germinate my seeds in the solarium every year. So
Nice.
all of that is on this side of the thermal curtain that we can put up and down in literally 3 4 minutes.
Nice.
So it's a basically we just push it to the side, and we have a thermal curtain that keeps one half of the cabin cool and this half sometimes a little too warm. But everything's about conserving energy, but we don't fight seasonality. And what I mean by that, as I said to you again yesterday during the pre-interview, downstairs I have a little refrigerator. It's maybe like not even chest high, probably like belly high. It's a Sun Frost. And the compressor's on the top in the cool, unfinished basement. Okay. So it very rarely has to turn on to keep the food closed, because the compressor is not like a typical American refrigerator where it's on the bottom where the heat dissipates through the box.
Huh.
This time of year, again, I'm not fighting seasonality, so I keep my refrigerated food on the basement floor right by the French doors.
Okay.
It stays a perfect 35 to 38 degrees.
Nice. Let me go back to the greenhouse real quick, because what I'm envisioning is, then how did you do the roof part to that? So if you had the wire panels all along the sides, and then you said you covered it with the UV plastic, but then did you just build like a framework structure sort of for the roof, and then you did the UV plastic over that as well?
No, the panels create a U shape, kind of like this.
Okay.
I put the UV plastic right over the cattle panels that I hooked on and overlapped.
Okay.
So my elbows are here.
Right.
Here's the ground, and here's the ground. And then here's the top. And I just put the UV treated plastic over that. Now on the side, you got to put something called a lath. So basically, you either hammer nails or I use screws, and a lath is something about this wide, just a piece of wood, right. And I screw it into the side of the greenhouse with another piece of wood on the other side, and then the plastic fits right inside there.
Gotcha. And so strong winds or storms, yeah. Snowstorms, that doesn't impact it at all?
No, I'm in a little, where my cabin is, I'm kind of in a little hidden valley. It's a very small little valley. It kind of, if I had to describe it, Corey, you ever see the movie Dances with Wolves with Kevin Costner?
Of course.
Yeah. At the end of the movie, the Sioux tribe had a winter ground that they camped in,
right?
And they showed how they maneuvered down through the trail to get to this little tiny hidden valley. That's kind of like what my place.
Whoever stayed to watch the end of that movie, it's like 6.5 hours long, for crying out loud.
Well, I know what. No. It's not quite that long, Jim, but I'm into nature, and I try to dial out all the political incorrectness about those type of movies, but I'm just into the natural world. That's my thing.
Well, speaking of that, man, you have quite a collection of animals there that you raise, and it's interesting that we had Jim Gale on here before, one of our very first guests, and he does the Living Gardens sort of outside
the
Food Forest Abundance, right? And he was talking about how he keeps certain insects around because they actually work in synergy, like you talked about, with the plants that he produces to help keep the other insects down and everything. Tell us if you can about. It sounds like you got that same sort of system going there with the animal husbandry. You have sort of a harmony with the animals that you have there that you raise. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, like I said, unless I have a chicken trying to identify as a guard dog, everything runs pretty smoothly. So what I do is, I gotta have animals to take down the fire hazard, which is the meadow that this cabin's in. So I chose goats because we got milk, and my girlfriend really enjoys doing things like making homemade cheese. And I give a lot of tours. I've given thousands of tours over the years about self-sufficiency and try to give people plan Bs.
Right.
And, and I've talked a lot about getting family and friends together, especially if somebody's compromised with capital resources or even skill sets. One great example is to, maybe an older person can do the purchase of the property and the younger people can do the labor of the homesteading. There's a lot of different ideas and solutions that have to be negotiated, and as long as everything's on paper, you can do it. But the synergy that you're talking about, Jim, is the fact that, I need to make soil for my garden. That's because everybody thinks, oh, the pretty vegetables are so good for you. The pretty vegetables aren't good for you. They're only good for you when the pretty vegetables are sitting in nutrient soil. The soil, the all the benefits of the veggies come from the soil. That's where the nutrients come from. So you got to make sure you add enough supplements to your soil every year. So I use the natural way to do it. I mean, you can put some magnesium in, some sulfur in, which I've done very infrequently, but all the poop from the chickens and the goats that's laced in straw, I take that and add it to my compost pile with my eggshells, my coffee grounds, every little tomato stem, you name it, it goes in there. So nothing that I have zero waste. When you have goats, chickens, dogs in a compost pile, it's e waste is either being eaten or it goes into the compost pile. Now I need the guard dogs because of the grizzly bears and the mountain lions and the black bears. And we have here in Northwest Montana, we probably have more mountain lions than anywhere else in the probably continent in Northwest
It's been
Montana.
said that if you're walking through the woods in Montana, there's no doubt at some point there's a mountain lion that's up in a tree that's been tracking you at some point or another. I mean, if you walk long enough,
Wow.
yeah, there's
Well,
and
I sent you that picture the other day, Jim, of that mountain lion. I was actually calling in an elk not too far from my cabin, and this mountain lion was stalking me, and I shot it. I mean, it was legal. I had the tag, but I'm just saying that there's the predator to prey relationship in this neck of the woods is very out of balance. Like last spring, I was bear. I mostly bow hunt. 85% of what I harvest is with a bow. I'm not anti-gun. I shot my moose with a gun a couple weeks ago. I am, but I just love the challenge of archery. So that being said, last spring, I went down to the Sealy Swan, just a little south of you, Jim, and I was hunting black bear. And in 6 days of hunting, I saw one grizzly, can't shoot them, and five black bear, all within like 60, 70 yards. One black bear, I did a stalk on it, and I didn't expect it to move the direction it did. And I had to hug up to a tree because it literally walked 2 yards behind me. So I kind of got lucky there. And a mountain lion at 35 yards. So, and I didn't see one deer, one elk, or one moose. So we have a major imbalance because the powers that be have purposely put in non-indigenous, extra large, not from this neck of the woods, from the northern portion of the continent, oversized wolves. And grizzlies have been protected so long, they're killing the black bears. They're the number one predator on fawns and calves. So elk calves and moose calves. So it's getting to the point where it's very obvious the powers that be are trying to consolidate power, money, and control and destroy our food.
But that's not everybody that lives. You have the parent, Great Pyrenees dogs. Is that what you're saying? You have the Great Pyrenees. Is that what you, is that the dog? Yeah, but
Great Pyrenees.
everyone's not going to need
Bulldogs.
everyone wouldn't be. I mean, I would think that not all locations are like Montana as far as like aggressiveness, as far as like aggressive animals.
Well, no, not with wolves and grizzly bears, of course not. But I'm just telling you that this is why the solutions are to decentralize, to be self-sufficient, to not only think outside the box, but to live outside the box. A lot of people talk about it, but they don't pull the trigger on that dream. And we have to, explain to people that it can be done, especially when you come from a metropolitan area like New York City. The Boy Scouts kind of indoctrinated me, if you will, into camping and hiking and canoeing and fishing and all that stuff. And I just kind of graduated from there and expanded my skill set. So I don't see too many other options with the corruption and the way things are than to decentralize and be self-sufficient at this point in time,
Well,
guys.
tell us if you can, Rich, give us the process of how, when you turn the light on in your house or even using the light right now to do this, what's the process of getting that energy? Because you're not on the grid. You don't have telephone electricity or I should say electric poles. You don't have city electricity. You don't have city sewer. You don't have any of that. How when you turn your light on here, what's the process of making that happen? If you could explain that.
Yeah, sure. Well, first of all, that's what off-grid means, Jim. Off-grid pretty much means, it has a very simple definition. It means you're not connected to the corporate electric grid. That's pretty much it. Now, I know people who live off-grid who have no electricity. I know people who live off-grid who only have a generator. I know people who live off-grid who have $50,000, $60,000 systems. Okay, it cost me like $15,000 because I have a very simple 675 amp hour system. So I use deep cycle lead acid batteries, the cheapest golf cart battery you can get, because there's a little maintenance to it. You got to check the electrolytes and things like that. You know, I don't use a hydrometer and check specific gravity because I've been doing this for so many years. It's just like second nature to me. But to answer your question with specificity, what I do is I have a battery bank. I have an inverter charger. I have a few things like DC disconnect, trimeters, solar charger, things of that nature. And of course, my solar panels outside. But when I turn on when the sun is out, the sun hits the panels and my battery bank gets banked with DC current. When I turn on a light inside my cabin, like I have right here, which is on me, the inverter charger takes the amps and volts out of the batteries. It goes through the inverter charger and gets converted to AC. When I turn on my generator to pump up water or to put during low light periods like now to charge my batteries, because with a deep cycle lead acid battery, you want to charge your batteries every 7 to 8 days roughly. So the AC generator helps me do that. It goes through the inverter charger and banks as DC. But I have lights just like everybody else does. I just live a lot more rugged. So I always tell people, when you want to live off grid, you have to assess your needs, your comfort, your capital resources, and your ability and desire to how rugged you want to live. And everybody has different answers to those questions.
What kind of things do you feel that you have missed out on? I mean, we want people to manage people's expectations. I mean, can you bake, and this is going to sound odd, can you bake a cake if you want to in your oven, just like you would be able to do here? Can you put Christmas lights up around your house? Not that you have a whole lot of people around, but I mean, does that just drain too much energy? I mean, what kind of things can you, I mean, you said you have to rough it up a little bit, but you still have most of the modern conveniences, right? I mean, you just don't have any, you're very frugal with stuff. Is that accurate?
Well, yeah. For example, the Christmas lights, you know, we do a lot of solar outdoor lights.
There you go.
And that works extremely well. And I'm looking at my wood cook stove right now, and I've cooked everything in there from pizzas to giant turkeys to cakes, and we do a lot of Dutch oven cooking. We've had people here, you know, when you're on national radio, when you write a book, and there's a lot, you get a lot of questions, and a lot of people seek you out. I've had people here from all over the world, and we're out in the meadow. I have a fire pit there. We do Dutch oven cooking.
There you
and
go.
you wouldn't believe the reactions you get from people. And half of the people who show up here from metropolitan areas around the world, they can't even legally have a fire in their yard.
That's so ridiculous.
They don't. So their freedoms, their liberties, their options are minimal. And, you know, it's just like technology. The more technology you have, the less freedom you have. I discussed that on the air today when I was on the air 2 hours this morning, right before I hooked up with you guys. So you got to think. You know, you say, what am I missing out on or what am I losing? I think everything I do is a gain, Jim, because what I'm doing is I'm gaining skill sets. And when I see people's faces, when they come here and they just see this lifestyle. Now, granted, a lot of people say, wow, you know, they see my taxidermy mounts or my pictures I used to have a website, for those of you who might remember, offgridmontana.com, and I had it for years. I just recently took it down because of the way things are going in this country. And anyway, a lot of people say, wow, what a high adventure, great nature, outdoor lifestyle you've led. But there's also a lot of people, as they're exiting, they're saying, wow, this is a lot of work.
Right.
So you have to decide, what lifestyle you want to lead, because unless you come from huge bucks, you're going to have to do most of the work yourself. That's the gardening, taking care of the animals. Right before I came on the air with you, after that radio show I was on, usapreparers.com, this morning, which I monologued, I had to go out, break ice for the critter water, and pour hot water that was in big pots that, I bring close to a boil from the wood cook stove, and I pour it into my rubber containers. So, and then the goats needed a second, because I got some goats separated, because we don't want to boink have all the goats boink. We have a male, a Billy. And it's so funny I'm saying this, because he got loose and got into the other pen. So right before my girlfriend went to work, we're running around chasing this buck, because she had to go to work. And I was minutes from going on a radio show. So it's just, you just got to expect stuff like that. Everything you got to do, you can't call the guy.
Right. But
there's
it's also
a lot less that can go wrong too, Corey.
Right. And it's so rewarding, just building things with your own hands, growing your own food, knowing that you're not having to rely on anyone, knowing that you have a certain level of, I mean, that to me, that's true freedom and privacy, knowing that you're unplugged from the control grid. I love that. Now, is the wood burning stove, is that your primary heat source, or do you have any other kind of heat
source?
Well,
outside of what I mentioned earlier, where I have that non-vented stove that's only good for a few hours a day during the shoulder season, because
right,
it's unvented, the wood cook stove is pretty much my only source of heat during the winter.
So you're constantly chopping down wood and having to put that in there.
I'll tell you, and getting into your 60s, things don't get they don't get any easier. I keep putting toothpicks underneath my pillow, hoping the free heat wood fairy is going to show up, but she never has.
But you chop all that down in the summertime, right? I mean, when it's not,
all year, Jim.
Yeah,
all year.
Oh, really?
The only time I really don't run the chainsaw is probably, or I shouldn't say, I don't usually run the chainsaw during December, January, and February. But from March through probably early November, it's wood. A lot of people wait to the last few weeks or month to get their wood. I do it throughout the year because I use about 9-10 cords of wood. And, it manages the forest, because as trees die, which they do, whether it be from beetle kill or whatever, maybe the root system's not healthy enough because there's too many rocks where they set their seed. For whatever reasons, they die. So you got to harvest trees to reduce the fire hazard. It's all part of the silviculture, which is the study of trees, and it's all about nature. Everything's synergistic.
So how much wood to get you through the winter? If you were to just, and I realize trees are of different sizes and whatnot, but roughly, like, how much wood are you having to cut to get you through a winter?
I usually go through 9 to 10 cords per year on average. Now, there's different BTUs depending on the species. Here in this neck of the woods, Doug fir and tamarack or western larch are the best two for BTUs. But I'll burn lodgepole pine, ponderosa pine, Engelmann spruce. I've even burned aspen, but it rots real quick, so you got to do it quick. I'm looking out my window here. I burn probably 10, 11 species. I've even burned subalpine fir, sometimes birch if I can get hold of it. I would say that 90% of my wood, I try to make fir, larch, and lodgepole pine, and probably you could probably throw Engelmann spruce in there. But so the BTUs change depending on, and then if you throw in a round versus a split, you're going to slow down the fire and cool off the cabin a little bit. So when I put in different pieces of wood in the stove, I put it in different areas. And if it's really too hot and I have a split in my hand, I'll turn it over and put it on the round side so it burns a little slower.
See, now that forestry degree did come in handy.
Yeah. Well, that's there is such a thing, Corey, called common sense and logic.
No,
So that's what I chalk
I'm
that
just
up
talking
to.
about all the different
I
species,
know.
the trees you were rattling off.
I know. You're well, you know what? But see, I'm a dendrology fan. I've always been. I'm about nature. I give tours and edible medicinal plants.
Listen, let me interrupt for a second. That's nothing, Corey. I've been over the man's house and we walk around his yard and he reaches down every time, picks up a plant, tells you where it's from, what it's used for, how you properly cook it, how you prepare it, what it you have to combine it with to get the maximum benefits. I mean, literally, I know Rich, you're here.
Why didn't you take me there when I was in town last year?
I don't know why we didn't, because I think you might have been maybe you out of town. I think he was hunting. That's how, you came during hunting season for Rich. That was
what was the
it's in
month?
October. Oh,
October. I'm in the woods, Corey.
yeah, he was hunting. But
what you need to do is get here when I'm not in the bush, and
Yeah.
you have my number. You could just call me, and I'll give you and yours a personal tour. And it's good. It's different being on the ground versus even if you saw my old website or see the pictures in the book. It's always different on the ground.
Oh, sure. So I want to know more about your water system, or systems, how you manage to get water out, inside the house, hot water versus cold, out to the gardens. I know you have a unique system there. And then also, do you collect rainwater as well?
Okay, those are very good questions. And I'll start with my overall system, which a lot of your listeners are going to have a hard time believing, and they're going to say, well, this is too rugged for me, but this is the way I chose to live. And because I enjoy camping, I enjoy, and I know this term is overused, glamping, but that's exactly how we live. So that being said, I don't have a hot water heater or a pressure tank. And I don't have interior pipes. Okay, do I have everybody's attention?
That
And
would do it.
I realize a lot of people would balk on that, but I want to tell you something. I've visited probably 200 off-grid homes in my life. 95% of them here in Montana. And I'll tell you something, everybody does it different. Again, it depends on your skill sets, your ability and a desire to live rugged, your capital resources. It all depends on your desired lifestyle. So, but I gotta say, a lender or a bank, if you want to live like this, you almost got to come in with cash. And I hate to say this to any young people listening. And that's why it's a good idea to combine natural resources with friends and family and do this. But a bank is not going to lend unless everything is done to code. Now, I got my foundation, my septic and drain field, which is gravity fed, everything, my well, everything certified into code, everything except for the water that I'm explaining right now. So how I decided to do it is because there's less that can go wrong. I mean, I saw what was ha what was where we were going with supply and chain disruptions many years ago. I could see how the powers that be were consolidating power, money, and control. And I wanted to do things inexpensively, but with a little extra elbow grease. Just like, a lot of my animals we take to a butcher, but I'd say probably 70% we've butchered ourselves. So it's just a different way of doing things. So what I do, I have two tanks, one above the wood cook stove, and I got a pipe, a plastic pipe, and I add water to the hot water reservoir of the wood cook stove, 20-gallon reservoir. And then I have another pipe that's smaller that hooks up to the sink, and we do a gravity feed to the sink. So when I'm washing dishes, which I'm going to be doing, by the way, right after I'm done here, is take hot water from the stove, pour the boiling water on the dishes, let it soak for a few minutes, and then I rinse off the soap with the water. And that's how I do it. And I have a clawfoot tub. I have a little, so if my girlfriend wants to take a bath, we take a hose from the water reservoir and connect it to the clawfoot tub, and we put pots and big containers of water on the stove that's hot, and we pour that in the wood cook in the clawfoot tub. During the summer months, I have what's called a Cody water heater in the greenhouse, and we could take showers or a bath in there. I'll just fill up the clawfoot tub with the garden hose, and that's what I use for my two tanks. I fill it up with a garden hose about once a month, and then I'll put a pump in there from this Cody water heater, and the water goes through the propane Cody water heater connected to a 12 volt battery. And in half an hour, it's a hot bath, or in 10 minutes, it's a hot shower. So everything is
Wow.
outside the box, but I urge people with what's not coming, with what's here. And I talk a lot about the stagflation that's here, and the little guy's going to see stagflation, deflation, and inflation. I won't go into that today, guys, but the solutions are that you've got to think differently. You got to think outside the box. And
Yeah.
too many people just think about it and they don't pull that trigger. You got to
Right.
do it.
I think most city folks would just probably shriek in horror of thinking about raising goats and cleaning up manure and doing all that. I mean, this is like something. I mean, it's like a talk about shock, talk about culture shock. I mean, how do you ease into this, Rich? I mean, we'd like to see everybody get to where you're at, and we'd all wish we were there. But you're at a well advanced level. How give us the starter kit? What's the starter pack for starting out? If just like.
Yeah, well, and on that same note, do you have any books you recommend that might show how to construct a water system or power system similar to what you have or variations thereof?
Well, my book obviously won New York Man's Journey to Off-Grid Living in Montana. But let me tell you something, since you brought that up. The power I had, phenomenal. I mean, 4 out of 7 stars for a few years out of 5, until the powers that be knew what I had. Then my book was coming, missing table of contents, missing the first chapter, missing the second
Huh.
chapter. I had words moved around, sentences deleted. We are in a book burning era. And,
Yeah.
so all these things that I talk about on the air, from election fraud to the vaccine bioweapon to the phony economy, the printing of money, all this, everything I talk about gets censored. And the last thing they want is this information to get out. See, it's not about teaching people knowledge. It's about controlling and managing the people. That's what the elite want. So when people hear these solutions, the elite cringe. So my recommendation is, in my book, I have a lot of references on how to go about things. But there's so much information on off-grid living. When I first started living off-grid and started going on the radio, people thought I was like off-grid meant, hiding from the authorities. No, all
Right, or
off-grid
living in the
means,
middle of nowhere,
right.
right?
And I'm only 4 miles from town, a small town. Where Jim lives in the Flathead, I'm like 45 minutes from Whitefish. So it's not, it's, I don't consider this to be, to live in the super boonies today takes super money. Okay.
Right. And I
So.
don't think it's wise, given everything going on. I think it's still important to be somewhat close to necessities because of the way they're trying to stomp out the real small towns in the first place. But the whole concept, like you said at the beginning, of off-grid simply means being unplugged from, the electric source and, well, we'll say, and their water source and their surveillance source. But that's exactly what you're doing, and yet you're only 4 miles from a town. So I think that's very ideal.
No, it's just a different way of doing it. I don't have a smart meter, and I've talked about many of the complications and dangers with that. from surveillance, you know, your cell phone, the tracking. I mentioned an article today where if you're on the wrong website, they have the capability to up the radiation on your cell phone. I know it sounds hard to believe, but when I say decentralized, I also mean going back in time. Mm-hmm. You don't have to, like, obviously I'm on a PC, but what I'm saying is there's nothing wrong with relearning the lost 19th century skills, but dovetailing them with 21st century technology. That's what my solar array is. It's 21st century technology, solar panels. Right. It's all electronic. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying that the old skill sets that we've lost needs to come back.
Yes.
Rich, we're talking about if things collapsed and everything went dark, you wouldn't even probably even know it if you didn't leave and go into town, right? I mean, you can stay, how long can you, indefinitely, is that correct? I mean, you really could live off your land here. You've got water supply. I mean, if things went south around you and you had to stay on your property and secure in place, let's say, how long could you live there with what you have now with your animals and the garden and whatnot? I mean, how necessary is it for you to even go to town in an emergency situation?
Well, my girlfriend still works 3 days a week. She's kind of semi-retired. And so you still go to town to pick up the mail. You know, you still get little things. You know, it's not like we do big shoppings. But, you know, we still want to get maybe a few canned goods to replenish things. And if the crapper hit the fan, how long could I stay here? I would say easy 6 months, if not longer. But you're still going to have to go places, to whether it be harvesting meat, whether it be catching fish. Now, granted, I live on a small river, basically a stream. And that's one of the reasons I have so many grizzly bears, because I have kokanee salmon in there in the fall, and the grizzlies are everywhere. I mean, I've had them walk by me. Well, I'm standing there with a bow and arrow. I mean, they're just walking by me. So yikes. Thank God I've always been, had the wind in my.
I've had a bear walk up right next to me before, man. You want to talk about being terrified, man, for a quick second. Thankfully, they just ignored me and kept going. But they could have mauled me in 2 seconds, no problem.
Oh, the smallest bear, you wouldn't stand a chance unless you have a weapon, you know, a pistol, firearm.
Yeah. I have a question that I think might be on some people's minds, only because I myself have done a lot of research on in different states and counties and zoning codes and all that, which we know they're also working on altering. You guys are in a great area when it comes to low-level restrictions with what you can do on your property. Like, James and I could probably come there and park RVs and live off your land, and you're not going to get in trouble for that. Most places, you're lucky if you can park an RV in your driveway for 2 weeks out of a year, or it has to be, you know, on the side of the house and covered so no one sees it. And so with the water system, for example, you said that you got your well to code, but that everything you did within the structure, you didn't have to file for a permit necessarily. I assume you were able to probably build that cabin the way you wanted. And aside from maybe the what about the electric? Did they look at your system that you set up for the electric, or does that not fall under their purview either?
No, when I did this, I made sure I had the right person do it properly and get everything approved and signed off. Because you got to do stuff like that for resale. Like, let me give you an example of what is happening here now. Now, granted, because I built this off grid, I didn't need a permit to build this cabin. Now, I'm not even sure in this county if you still need a permit even to be on grid. I don't know, because I didn't, you know, I don't know. You might not even have to do it. But the certain things that you certify, like a well and a septic and drain field, let me give you an example. I know people who have put in their own homemade septic and drain fields. They did it to code. But guess what? They didn't get it certified. They didn't get the stamp of approval. And then when they want to sell their property, they're having issues because they're looking for a cash buyer. Because of lending.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, and it's the same thing, like when you want to subdivide. Now you can do what's called family land transfers, you can do BLAs or boundary line adjustments. I've done them all, and you can do mini subdivisions, done them all. Okay, because I was dabbling in land development the last 18 years because I had no choice post corporate America. But you can't build a subdivision unless you have what's called a 60-foot easement. So you have to have 60-foot wide easement in order to, whether it be for utilities, whatever it is, it could be
Right.
a side of a ditch, it doesn't matter. You cannot subdivide unless you have a 60-foot easement, unless you do a family land transfer, which you can only do five. And there's some gray areas with that, but that's kind of some of the loopholes that some people use. So I recommend everything you do. There's nothing wrong with living off grid. It's just a different way of doing it. So, but there's always lending issues depending on who you want to sell to.
Rich, you only got about 10 minutes left here. And what I'd like to do for the folks, leave them with some immediate things that they can do if they wanted to. I know when I say if you want to decide to start living off grid, you're right. You got to think all this through. But let's say they get through the mental gymnastics and they may come to the conclusion, yes, a husband and wife or family get together. Yes, we're going to do this. We think it's time. Give us sort of the first few steps. Obviously, they have to find land somewhere that's preferably away from the community, from a town somewhere, but close enough to where if they have to go into town or a hospital, let's say, for example, they're not 40 miles away. So the land goes first, and then you build the house. Let's say you get the land and you build the house. Let's start there. What animals would you get first to start? Would you always get a goat first? Would you start your garden right away? How soon do you have to put the electrical stuff in? I mean, give us kind of that process if someone really wanted to do it. And I know we're not going to cover it all here with this brief 10 minutes left, but let's just do like an overview, like a Cliff's notes, if you would.
That's a very good question, Jim. So the first thing I would do is decide how much acreage you want. And again, that's capital resources. It's how much time you want to put into the land. I would always make sure you have trees. I would never buy, and never did buy flat pasture with no trees,
Right.
because you don't have no privacy. Your water table could be compromised from some of the chemicals that were put in there from a past farmer. You could, I want a balance of
Firewood.
natural resources. So I want ridges, I want draws, I want a meadow, live water. Of course, you can't get everything you want. I want end of road privacy property. A 5 acre piece in this neck of the woods is worth as much as a 20 acre parcel if it's at the end of the road, which means that nobody has an easement through your property. Just so you know, in Northwest Montana, 95% of the properties has an easement going through it. So I'm giving you the ideal situation, okay? So I want woodlots because I want trees for my heat. Soil is irrelevant because I make my own soil. I bring in good nutrient soil that I pay for from a nursery, and then as my soil expands with the way I shared with you earlier in the program, I will expand on more raised beds. So I say get a place that has semi-southern exposure for a good garden. Here in Montana, the sun is so high during the summer months. I mean, it's so brutal that you don't need as much southern exposure as you think. Okay. I set up my cabin on the edge of a northern slope. So during the hot summer months, the cool air filters off of that and cools down my house, my cabin, so I don't need air conditioning. I would also, if you're going to live off grid for solar, you definitely want some southern exposure. You don't want too much northern exposure because the days are so short and the sun's so
When you say
low.
southern exposure, do you mean it's where the sun from the south hits your, so there's no trees blocking the sun? It's
That's
not obstructed. Is
correct.
that what you mean?
You don't want anything blocking solar panels. When you put your hand on a solar panel, just and cover 5% of it, you've destroyed like 90% of the solar power of that panel just by doing that, at least temporarily, by putting your hand on that. So
Wow.
you want as much southern exposure as possible. During the 8 months out of the year, I get more energy than I know what to do with. And that's why I have a small system of 675 amp hours. Each battery is 225 amp hours, and I've got them wired in three sources together in clumps of four and three clumps. So 3 times 225 gives you the 675 amp hour system. Now, if you do your homework, that's 95% of the people have a much bigger system, but then they got to run their generator or their AC supplements a lot longer during that short period of the year, which is now, because we're only, 2 weeks, 3 weeks away from the shortest day of the year. Those people have to run the bejesus out of their generators because they got to keep, it depends on the battery. Is it lead acid? Is it silicon salt? Is it iron sulfate, which needs 45 degrees, not applicable for Montana? Is it lithium? There's so many different choices.
Which batteries do you use?
I use the cheapest T105, Trojan 105, lead acid, deep cycle batteries. And I do that purposely because I'll get 8 or 9 years out of it. My whole battery bank, Corey, cost me $1,500. My whole system
Wow.
cost me $15,000. So it depends on how most of these questions, the answer is it depends on how much work you want to do. And there's a learning curve here, folks. You can read all the books, you can ask all the questions, but you have to do a lot of reading and research and do your homework, because you got to figure out how many amps and volts you want. And it varies depending on the collection of the sun through the solar rays. Okay. You have to do that homework. Nobody can do it for you. So your appliances and the way you live is going to have to be relevant to the way the size of your off-grid electrical system.
Do you have appliances there? Like, do you have a microwave or anything?
I don't have a microwave because I wouldn't have a microwave if I lived on grid. It's
yeah.
very unhealthy for you. I have a coffee maker. The big things, I think I mentioned this to you guys at the pre-interview last night, the coffee maker, the iron, the vacuum, certain things that take a lot of amps.
Right.
And those things run very infrequently. Like the coffee maker, once the coffee maker's done, we'll take the coffee pot and put it on the edge of the wood cook stove.
Okay.
Now you use the coffee grounds for your compost pile, yes?
Correct. Oh, and let me put something in perspective here, guys. When I keep talking about the AC generator, and everybody probably is thinking in the background, while he's living off his AC generator. Just for context, I use 200 gallons of high octane gas per year for my generator, my side-by-side UTV, which is 98% a work tool, my wood splitter, and my chainsaws. That's off the top of my head. So 200 gallons of gas for all four of those things for the whole year. So if you're thinking, when I go to the flathead, like if I'm meeting Jim, I'm going to the flathead, 200 gallons of gas, is a few trips.
Right. Right.
So I just wanted to put that in perspective, that in case your listeners think that it's all AC generator, it's not even close.
Yeah.
200 gallons of gas is nothing for the four things I just mentioned for year round use. And I push up my water with the AC generator. And I water my garden with the AC generator. So it's not as much of a hardship as you think. Because every time I run the AC generator, I'm banking volts and amps into my battery system.
How does that work with watering your garden? How do you have the water set up out there?
Good question. Now, I've been doing this 15 years. So when I started doing this, a lot of my stuff is obsolete. But the old stuff, the old more of an analog type stuff, less of a computer type stuff, works better. They don't break down as much. They last longer. They're built better. Mm-hmm. That being said, when I run my AC generator to water my garden, even though that time of year I probably don't even need to bank stuff in the year. In fact, I know at that time of year in the summer, I don't even need to bank volts and amps because the sun, the days in Montana during the summer are ridiculously long. In fact, I often shut down my upper panels and just use my four little panels on top of my shed often during the summer.
Yeah, it doesn't get dark till like 10 at night
Later
sometimes.
than that, 10:45
Yeah,
sometimes.
later than that, yeah.
Wow.
And it's light. I've seen it, I mean, around June 21st, you can see the sun starting to rise, or at least the horizon getting bright as early as four. So
So call me ignorant, but most of us have a spigot coming out the side of our house and we have a hose connected and we use that to water. So how does this tie in? How does the water system tie in with the generator to then water your garden?
well, I have my generator wired to my well casing,
Okay.
and I have a spigot, and I just connect the hose to the spigot and run my generator. Because I've been doing this 15 years, Corey, so much of my stuff is obsolete. I didn't have the option of having an inverter charger that was 220 or 240 volts. So I use 110 volt. Now, could I have wired two in unison in
Yeah.
order to pull up water with the batteries? Yes. But because of this lifestyle that I lead, and when I get water for the critters or water the cabin once a month with a garden hose, I'm banking those volts and amps into my system. So I
Right.
chose to do it the way I'm saying, and because I didn't have that access to a 220 or 240 volt inverter charger, even though I could have wired two 110s together. So
Right.
this works good, and that's why I wanted to put the gasoline usage in perspective. That makes
Right.
sense.
Yeah.
Before we go, Rich, goats or chickens? Which would you choose if you can only
Oh.
choose one?
You had to put that
That's
last.
not a fair question.
Well, to me, I need, if I didn't have goats in my meadow that I cleared thousands of trees, okay, I probably have, I don't know, 10 acres of pasture ish right now. I'm shooting from the hip here. But if I didn't have the ability to cut that grass, the goats, I'd have to mow it. The only place I mow is in the garden around the raised beds because obviously the goats don't read the sign to eat just the grass, right?
Yeah.
So, and the chickens, they offer food and eggs, and the both species offer fertilizer. So everything works in synergy. And it depends, again, a lot of these questions is that's why I say it depends, because it depends on your lifestyle. I know people who have horses. I know people who have cows. I know people who have miniature cows. I know people who have sheep. Is it a pet or is it food or is it both? Everybody's got to make certain decisions on what works best for them. And again, it depends on their interests, their hobbies, their capital resources, their desires, their ability and desires to live rugged. How much time? I'll tell you one thing, guys. If you're thinking about living this way, one thing that's almost impossible to do, and that's leave. Now, I did so much traveling in corporate America, especially the way things are with TSA and, they're doing facial scanning and I can go on. I could talk about this for half an hour, but I won't. Traveling isn't what it used to be. It's no longer fun. So I
Yeah,
don't
yeah.
miss traveling. So I got it out of my system in the corporate America, and I'm very happy, being more of a home buddy. And I have to be because these animals depend on us. We can't
Right.
just leave them and let the water freeze up. Everybody's gonna die.
Well, which
So
is why friends and family going in on something together could be beneficial, so that if a couple people did need to leave, go do a little traveling or whatever, then there's always someone to hold the fort down.
absolutely. And there's different ways of doing it. Sometimes I bring in neighbors and friends to do it. I have this one, this the big male Great Pyrenees is getting a little aggressive, and I can just look at him and he backs down. But if I'm not here, because I give tours and there's a lot of kids, I give tours to kids'
Right.
ranches and stuff. So as long as I'm there to watch, you know, everything's cool. But
Right.
when someone comes in to house sit, sometimes it, you know, like it was this last friend of mine, she came in, she got bitten the butt.
Oh,
So she's
no.
afraid of the dog, you know.
It's a huge dog, man. I'd be afraid of it too. Are you kidding
I
me?
love Pyrenees. They're beautiful.
Well, they are beautiful, but they're more functional and purposeful. And a lot
Yes.
of people who live in apartments or tiny little houses buy them, and it makes them very unhappy. They are born to guard. They've been bred to guard since the days of Julius Caesar, and they love chasing grizzly. I've seen three. I had three grizzly bears around, three dogs around one of my grizzlies, eating apples off my fruit tree. I mean,
Wow.
I got lions walking by, black bears. Almost every day you see coyotes and fox. Never mind birds of prey. I mean, these guys literally stop aerial attacks. Least 99% of them. It's,
Now,
yeah.
I know we're like out of time, but I just have to ask, what are your top five medicinal plants that you feel everyone should grow if they're, in the right climate to do that?
Well, I would say chaga and burdock, but I wrote down some of the plants that I harvest here: dandelion, elderberry, fireweed, foxtail grass, gooseberry, hawthorn, lamb's quarter. Lamb's quarter grows everywhere. It's high in vitamin C and calcium. It's great for to add into your salad. Just don't eat the seeds. Plantain, wild onion, Oregon grape, purslane, red clover. I mean, there's so many. Wild asparagus. Burdock is one of the plants that's in the that nurse from Canada. I'm trying to think of the name. It's involved. It's very healing. It's a blood purifier, and you eat the roots. It has anti-inflammatory purposes as well, and eliminates uric acid. It's just a great plant. It's po very popular in China. Violet has vitamin A and C. Kinnikinick, thimbleberry, strawberry, and raspberry blight. I also add that. It's in the spinach family. I add that to a lot of my salads. Let's see. Trying to think. It all depends on things like toxicity. I mean, is it emetic? Is it a laxative? Is it, you know, you got to think of your liver and kidneys. So you gotta like oxeye daisy scares a lot of people, but the leaves early in the season is delicious and very nutritious, and I add it to my salad. But it's a considered a what do you call that, Jim? Like knapweed. What's the category? It's noxious weeds. It's not the only reason a lot of these weeds or plants are noxious is because cattle won't eat it. I'm not kidding you. So you gotta every never take anything at face value. You got to do your reading and research, and it's fun. Nature is fun. I didn't use this word fun today. I'm going to make up for it right now. Fun, fun, fun. This lifestyle is fun. Okay, it's not just about what survival. It's about nature and appreciating it and respecting it.
Well, it sounds like people need to get your book, Rich, if they want to really get down to give out your name of your book again here before we go ahead and roll through the end of the interview.
Well, last I checked, you can get it at Amazon. The title is New One New York Man's Journey to Off-Grid Living in Montana. But be aware, folks, because of the political incorrect nature of the book, not just the self-sufficiency, but what I talk, I use financial, economic, social, and political rationale. And I give real life scenarios of what happens, of what has happened. So a lot of the powers that be want to distract us, use deception, dumb us down, and use divide and conquer strategies. So they don't like that book. So you're going to get words mixed around, sentences deleted. You might have table of contents in the introductory chapter eliminated. I've seen it all.
Is
And they got.
it just available on Kindle version or is it in paperback?
You can get it electronically, I believe, in a Kindle version, and I prefer 99% of my reading, Corey, comes from real life books in my hand. I don't know if you can see over my right shoulder. I
Is
mean,
yours
I
available in paperback though?
yes.
So,
Yeah.
but you're saying on reprints that they may have messed with even the paperback version.
Hold on. I like to
He's
get,
gonna show us.
I'm a proof kind of guy. Okay, here's my book, One New York Man's Journey to Off-Grid Living in Montana. And this is chapter one on the first page. So the introductory chapter and the table of contents has been eliminated from this particular book.
Oh wow.
This is the
Wow.
first chapter, yeah.
It's
And
washed out. We can't see it here.
I've had books come back to me, Corey, where you wouldn't believe the the editing.
Yeah.
I mean, it's almost scary. I'm when I say we're living in the book burning era
Yeah.
of America, I
Well,
mean it.
folks are going to have to take a chance, I guess, Rich, because they have no other choice. I guess you'll have to take a stab at it, and hopefully they don't put the table of contents at the end. I mean, that's all I can say.
You know what, guys? We're at a point in history that anything that you say wouldn't surprise me anymore.
Right?
Well, it's not going to surprise you that we're coming to the end of the broadcast here, Rich, because we've been kind of teasing that for a few minutes. You got something else you wanted to say before we go?
Well, I just want to say, everybody, if you want to live off grid, if you want to be frugal, if you want to be self-sufficient, if you want to live off the land, if you want to learn skill sets, I will show you every time a child who grows up with a fishing pole or a bow and arrow or a shotgun in their hand, the odds of that person being on the corner selling or taking meth or any drug is very slim. We got to go back to common logic and common sense, and you can't get there through artificial means. I always say, in the book, I have an acronym: keep away from SARP, synthetic, artificial, refined, and processed. And that includes propaganda, hoaxes, false flags, lies, and gaslighting. You have to think we're in an era, you have to do your own reading, research, verification, and vetting, and you have to think for yourself. Anything else you guys want to add to that?
No, think for yourself. I think that's a good way to end the show, because I think that's what we try to have people do here with the Solution Series. We try to give them solutions and have them think for themselves. Corey, is there anything that you wanted to say?
I'm looking forward to coming back to Montana and coming and hanging out at your place.
Oh yeah, we'll go out there. Yeah, we just can't do it during hunting season because I can't even get in touch with him in hunting season. He's gone for weeks at a time.
And Corey, you're always welcome by my fire, and just be open-minded because it's going to be a shocker for most people who haven't seen this kind of lifestyle in person.
Oh no, I would love it. I would love it. If there weren't grizzlies, I'd just pitch a tent right outside. Or maybe I could borrow your dog and he can hang out with me in the
I think we could find something for you guys to say.
Rich Sheeben, Montana Mountain Man, great conversation, man. I mean, I've been to your place, and you really have done it right. I mean, you're the real deal. You're the genuine article, no doubt about that. We do appreciate you taking time out of your day here to be on with us on the Solution Series, Rich. And we're again. Maybe we'll do a follow-up episode in the spring. We'll actually come out there on location and do a part two, on location with you. I think that'd be a pretty cool
That would
thing.
be awesome.
Yeah. All right. Very
Sure.
good, folks. We're just at the end of the broadcast here. We do appreciate you looking in and joining us here once again on the Solution Series brought to you by Solari.com and Corey'sDigs.com. You can go to Corey'sDigs.com and click on the link at the top to join the Solution Series or go to Solari.com. Until next time, this is James White for the Solution Series saying bye now.